Hi, and thank you for tuning in. Hi, and thank you for tuning in again to the Mad Scientist Exposed. And there's been a lot going on in science this week, some of it quite depressing and some of it quite exciting. And so maybe I should get the depressing stuff out of the way. The two big articles came out this week, vaccine devastation going on in the world. The tetanus vaccine causes a new disease known as antiphospholipid syndrome. And that's, we knew this was coming because the tetanus vaccine was weaponized for Kenya to cause, specifically with the HCG pregnancy element, to cause miscarriages, make women, immune to their own pregnancies. And that's been chased down quite a bit by the Catholic doctors organizations over there who fought them at it. But this article is a new disease. It's the vaccine junta is not only, this is at Health Impact News. It starts off, the vaccine junta is not only unconcerned with vaccine-induced diseases, it's massively gearing up this vaccine arms race against the human race. It's known that tetanus vaccine causes a new disease, antiphospholipid syndrome. New adjuvants are composed of phospholipids, a potential disaster. Now, when it says there's an arms race against the human race, they're not specific as to who's doing it. And these people like to operate in the shadows, so it's hard to know who they are. There's a lot of talk out there about the globalists, and they're out in the open now. They're heavily involved in this election, the elections in Europe, and all this. They're really coming out in the open. They want everything controlled. They want to own you. They'll decide if you'll live or die. And they're heavily involved in the big corporations, particularly big pharma, and that includes the vaccine industry. Now, the vaccine industry, back in 1986, they wanted to be exempt from liability for vaccine injuries, and they went to Congress and they said, look, we're going to go out of business and stop providing vaccines if you don't exempt us from liability, so people can't sue us when the children die or are crippled or mentally brain damaged or anything like that. So, Congress acquiesced because at the time everybody believed in vaccines. Oh, this was the way to prevent major diseases. And, the vaccine paradigm is several hundred years old. It goes way back. And, the plague was coming to town or the smallpox. They found that dairy maids who had been exposed to cowpox were less likely to come down with smallpox. And if you could get just a little bit exposed and react to it, get over it, then the theory was that you wouldn't get the big disease. Well, nobody really credited, over the last couple hundred years as the number of vaccines increased, because there were, it started out with only a few. But the mid-1800s or so, people started installing plumbing, running water, and hygiene improved. Over the last century or so, mosquito control has improved, although now it's wreaking havoc down in Brazil. The paradigm didn't keep up with the science, even though the new hygiene, the running toilets, people weren't throwing sewage in the street anymore, washing. The doctors eventually learned to wash their hands between surgeries. All of this came together to stop some of these major, major diseases, but that's not credited. Only the vaccines are credited with it, and now they're vaccinating children with such a heavy vaccine burden that it's just too much, and a non-insignificant percentage of them are succumbing with damage. If your kid doesn't get autism, then your kid might have eczema or asthma or any number of diseases. Anyway, this article goes on, the globalists, the eugenicists, really, at the top, because there's Nazis born every generation. They're using this as a stealth bioweapon. They were caught red-handed in Africa, sterilizing women and causing massive miscarriages in Kenya just about a year and a half ago. So it was bound to come here to the U.S. Here it is. They've done something different to the tetanus vaccine for the American population because, you know, they've already managed to damage American fertility quite a bit. You know, we're down to, I believe it's under two children per woman on average. So, you know, and with the widespread abortion, you know, they've marketed that as a great big thing. You know, of course, if you know, people, I don't know, who's going to complain if they're doing it to themselves and they sell it to them and trick them into, you know, destroying their most valuable asset, which is their own children. Anyway, the article goes on. The tetanus vaccine causes a new disease known both as Hughes syndrome and antiphospholipid syndrome, APS. It's an autoimmune condition that can attack any part of the body, though it's best noted for heart attacks and killing fetuses. Oh, isn't that just splendid? Because you know, in the parents groups I've been reading on Facebook, they're really, really heavily targeting the pregnant women. They come back and they tell the group, they tried to make me take the DTaP, or they did make me take the DTaP, or they made my daughter take the DTaP, and now she's laboring to deliver a 30-week stillborn baby. But this is, and here it is documented. Let's see, noted for heart attacks and killing fetuses. It's likely that APS will become more common with the new generation of vaccine adjuvants now being produced. The sufferers of APS are mostly women, and it is diagnosed. Its diagnosis is often made as a result of multiple pregnancy losses. As is typical of new diseases, research is focused on finding a genetic cause, in spite of the fact that the connection with vaccines is well known and documented. And you know, they started this genetic thing, months ago. You know, the public is just in meltdown over the autism rate out there. I mean, we're up to like 1 in 50 boys is autistic, or maybe it's 1 in 50 children, including girls. I'm not sure. But it's really, really high. And you know, the public's in meltdown. You know, the only thing, you know, they walk in with this perfectly normal child, and then, you know, they shoot them all up with the vaccines, particularly the DTaP. And within, you know, a couple of weeks, he's had his fever, his seizures, his, you know, screaming headaches with the swollen brain, and then they're never the same again. And but what they're doing now is they're targeting pregnant women, because if they can induce that before the child was born, then you never saw your child normal. You can't, you know, you can't pinpoint a date at which you saw the vaccine damage your child, whether it's the MMR or the DTaP. And if you can't pinpoint it, well then, that's the genetic, is that's a birth defect. The child was born with it. None of us could have foreseen it. You know, and so if they can get the mother to take the vaccine before the baby's born, she's less likely to say, hey, the vaccine did it. Well, you know what? The public isn't that dumb. It's just not. Anyway, if they can pin it on genetics, then they can say you're a genetic defect and you know, keep the tally for the future eugenics programs, because our government's out of control. You all saw that today with the people in the highest places being just above the law. They're so high, they're above the law. And it's just, I'm just very upset today about the thing with with the Department of Justice. So anyway, they're focusing on fighting a genetic cause, pin it on that, no matter how they have to fudge the data, in spite of the fact that the connection with the vaccines is already well known and documented. As the name implies, APS is a condition of the phospholipids, natural and necessary substances required by every part of the body, is seen as an infectious agent by the immune system. That's when you've got this APS. So this substance that exists in every cell becomes subject to attack. Symptoms, and that's, you know, your body killing itself. Symptoms include blindness, cardiovascular symptoms such as deep vein thrombosis, which is clots in the veins, phlebitis, thrombocytopenia, which is deficiency of blood platelets causing bleeding and bruising. Sounds like hemophilia to me too. Atherosclerosis, pulmonary embolus, which is clots in the lungs, heart valve abnormalities, and stroke. Oh my gosh. And headache and migraines, miscarriages, neurological disorders. It goes on. Epilepsy, chorea, which is sudden, uncontrollable, jittery movement. Transverse myelitis, which is inflammation of the spinal cord. multiple sclerosis. Oh, and that is also listed, the transverse myelitis. That's also listed in the Gardasil vaccine. Isn't that nice? Multiple sclerosis, cognitive dysfunction. You know, I've known people who died young of multiple sclerosis. It's horrible. Skin disorders, including mottling, ulcers, and necrosis. Oh, my gosh. APS can also be diagnosed, more accurately misdiagnosed, as lupus. Lupus erythematosus, which is another vaccine-induced condition. I know another woman who, woman I used to work with, had lupus, and she had her drug cocktail that she took every day. And in the time that I knew her, she was a lovely woman, and you know, she got married. And I was at her wedding. It was very nice, but she had to be very careful about planning the timing of her wedding and when she thought she was going to be well. It just, and it was a very physically demanding job, too. She eventually moved on to a more career in a more academic environment, so we parted ways at that point. Anyway, APS and vaccines. One study called Yu syndrome, the classical antiphospholipid syndrome, and that study refers to similarities between plasma protein beta 2, this is very scientific, I don't want to bore you all, which is attacked in APS. And the tetanus vaccine, that is, the tetanus antigen has parts that are virtually identical to beta 2 GPI, which is found virtually everywhere in the body. It goes on and on and on. Why new generation vaccines are especially worrisome. Phospholipids are a primary part of your body, forming part of the membrane of every cell. They're under attack in APS. What's frightening is that they're becoming a primary ingredient of vaccines in the form of new generation. You know, they just can't kill us fast enough with the vaccines they had. They just can't, and so they're upping the ante. Because, I mean, if you go, you know, they carved it in stone in the Georgia Guidestones. They're globalists, the eugenicists, the global eugenicists. Their goal is to reduce the world population down to 500 million, which is what population they want gone. And, you know, it's all the same to them whether you die or you're rendered in such a crippled state that or sterile state that you can't have children. That's okay with them, you know, because you're not going to increase the world. You'll eventually die. But, you know, it's less money out of society if you die quicker than later. But, of course, they make the money of all the upkeep that you need if you're chronically ill. So there's a balance that they draw. You know, they eventually get sick of you and turn off your life support. I know, I sure hope now that Great Britain has declared its independence from the EU that they clean up their NHS, because the NHS, depending on what county you live in, they'll cut off your dialysis when you reach a certain age. You know, you could, some counties it's as young as 55 that if you need dialysis, too late, you're too old, we're just going to cut you off. And you can just kiss your grandkids goodbye, and they can kiss you goodbye. And it's a miserable way to live. And that's what Obama has in mind for us. And I get quite angry about these issues, so I'm sorry. I try to lighten it up. There's good science news. Oh my gosh, here it goes on with squalene in the new vaccine. Squalene is the smoking gun in the anthrax vaccine that was given to our soldiers in the first Gulf War. It is the cause of Gulf War syndrome. It was so unexplained for so long. Oh, so long. Well, YouTube, you can find it. Look up Gulf War syndrome, and it's, I believe the documentary is called Direct Order, something like that. It documents all these servicemen and women who were devastatingly crippled by the anthrax vaccine. And the squalene is the supposed smoking gun in that. So, of course, you know, let's not forget, what is it, about a year and a half ago, the CDC accidentally, quote-unquote, mailed the anthrax virus to labs all over the country. And I can't call that an accident. They called it an accident. But my motive in my head, because I don't believe this government is on the people's side anymore, they're looking for a crisis. They're looking for, you know, if they need to keep us down, I think these cities will all release this anthrax at once. That's what I think is what they're thinking in their heads. You know, I can't prove any of this. I just read events. But, you know, the way this thing is going and Hillary marching, she's above the law. this election is going to get worse before it gets better. I'm so sorry. That is my belief. And I don't see events changing. There are people that are above the law, and people that, you know, but the mainstream media, you know, they're going to bless it. You know, what went down today with Hillary being cleared of all her mishandling of security information in the State Department. But they all joke about the people who rushed the stage. They've been a couple now trying to kill Trump. They won't let him be elected without trying something. I don't know what they'll try. They're lining up all kinds of different ducks, and they'll pick one. They'll just pick and see if they can, you know, if they can get away with doing it without actually drawing guns. Well, fine. We'll just all lay down and be sheep. But I can't imagine the country being sheeps anymore. So I think he's going to try martial law. I mean, if he declared martial law on March 16th, 2012, in the NDAA there, you can download it right from the whitehouse.gov website. March 16th, 2012, the government, in an emergency, they will own everything. Well, what's to call an emergency, all water sources, all fuel sources, all medical sources, all food sources, including your gardens, every plant that you have in your hydroponic. I mean, that sounds like over the top, and they try to be vague, but that's what that means. If you just download that document and read it, the executive order of March 16th, 2012. That was a Friday night, the night before St. Patrick's Day. You know, the country wanted to party, have a few green beers and all that stuff, and so they buried it. Everything, their document dumps on Friday nights before a holiday or a day, and that's what this was all about this week, all around the 4th of July, with Bill meeting with the Attorney General, Bill Clinton meeting with the Attorney General, and then this interrogation of Hillary on the weekend of the 4th of July. And then, poof, here it is, the day after the 4th of July. Oh, geez, all clear and exonerated. Oh, and isn't it wonderful? Now, Comey was supposed to be the Mr. Squeaky Clean, you know. He was going to do it right. And he says, oh, well, she didn't intend to do it. Well, the law wasn't written that way originally. And so he's rewriting it. Or somebody rewrote it for him. I think what happened, you know, I've been following a lot of court cases, you know, people suing Obama over his identity documents, over Obamacare, whatever. Every court case that Obama is dragged into suddenly comes up on the wrong side of the Constitution. And I absolutely believe he's buying the judges, or threatening them, or both, because there was a case in January 25th, in Georgia of 2012, I don't know, it was early tapes, and it was the day after Obama came to Chandler, Arizona, and stood in front of those cranes in the Intel plant, and the next day was a court hearing in Georgia. You know, and he was here with Sheriff Joe, and Sheriff Joe was no fan, and Sheriff Joe has had his press releases, press conferences, where he goes over how Obama has forged his identity documents. We don't know who the heck he is. I think his last known citizenship is Indonesia, where he went to an Indonesians-only school. But anyway, he was doing court the next day, and was he going to go? No, he didn't show up. You know, a few lawyers showed up. In that case, they had the evidence down cold on him, and the judge simply, and because Obama's lawyers didn't show up, the suing side should have won by default. No. The judge acted as the entire defense team and wrote that up in his opinion, and that was it. You know, that was over. And within that week, Georgia got two new licenses for nuclear power plants, and there hadn't been any such licenses issued in, I think it was, 3 decades. And Georgia suddenly had two new nuclear power plant licenses within a week of the judge hearing or finding for the defense, when the defense should have defaulted because they weren't even there. So anyway, I have lost my faith in the government serving the people in this country at this time. And so this whole thing with the squalene in the new tetanus vaccine, the new DPT or DTaP, it's just beyond belief. It's beyond belief. And You know, I email all my kids every few months, or I call them up and I'll extract a promise out of them. Now, remember, don't ever accept another vaccine because these cannot be trusted. They have no liability. You cannot do them. There's a little 75% tax on every vaccine that goes to this government fund for taking care of people that are vaccine injured or compensating families of the vaccine killed. But that's a very, very hard road to go. You've probably heard him speak. He was on the show a few weeks ago, Greg Wyatt, his son was horribly damaged by vaccines, and his daughter was too, and both his children. His son is 18. He functions at the mental ability of a 3-year-old. His daughter is 16, and she functions at the mental ability of about a 6 or 7-year-old. And Weston is the boy's name. And they just got this ruling that, oh, nothing's wrong with Weston. We're not going to cover anything. And he needs 24-hour care the rest of his life. And this is just going to come out of where? He doesn't know. And I linked to his an interview with him a couple of weeks ago, and I can link to it again today. Anyway, the government is not looking out for the people. This whole vaccine thing, maybe started out as the idea was helping public health a few decades ago, but now it's a eugenics program. And I've heard reference to something called Project Paperclip, where we actually hired Nazi doctors, gearing up our vaccine program post-World War II. And I haven't read a whole lot on that. Maybe I should read up on that. But it doesn't matter where they came from, because evil people are born in every generation. And, people kill for money, people kill for sport, people kill for who knows. Anyway, so there's one other article here, and then I'll get on to the fun stuff. The other article is Gardasil, Sharing the Carnage with Boys. And this is vaccineimpact.com. And a wonderful, beautiful picture of a boy named Zach, who's, I guess, just a little bit younger than my boys. My boys are in their late teens, early 20s. And it says, in 2014, at the age of 18 and a half, Zach was a first semester full-time college student, worked a laborious job roughly 30 hours a week. His life was on track. He was social, active, and happy. Zach swam like a fish in the water with a body built for track, who walked miles almost every day. Same year, Zach sustained an ankle injury, which placed him out of work while he recovered. During his October 3rd appointment for his ankle, he was talked into a flu vaccine. October 13th, Zach returned for a follow-up appointment and was talked into accepting the Gardasil and meningitis vaccines, two more. It was shortly after that the first phase of his health decline began. And this article just goes worse and worse and worse. He's not dead, but he went partially deaf. I don't know if he's recovered from that. They get, these ear infections. He's in a wheelchair now. His doctors, of course, they sent him on round robins of doctors, back and forth. And some doctors send him back to the doctors that were sent there in the first place. He finally found a doctor out of network who diagnosed it as a vaccine injury, but it's hard to trace which symptom. He's got so many. He wasted away, 6 feet tall, wasted away to 110 pounds, and now his spine is collapsing. He's in a wheelchair. It just kills me because Obama would say he looks like my son could look. Well, he does look like my son's look, because I have two sons. So anyway, I have a link to it. You can go read the article. But please, please, please remind your kids to never accept another vaccine as long as they live, or any for their children. Now, I don't have any grandchildren yet. I'm out to save the world before I do have any grandchildren, because I it's very easy. All this stuff is just below the surface. And in social media, it's very easy to find these articles, and there are a lot of them, a lot. And so that's the thing on the vaccines now. They have it published on the Georgia Guidestones that they're going to reduce the population, and by gosh and by golly, every one of these chinks takes out, a few percent of the population, and you get enough of them, and pretty soon you know, you're up to 100% of the population. You know, you need, what is it, 56 vaccines by the time you go to kindergarten. A large chunk of those are in the first year. That just drives that SIDS rate. And then, you know, you're up to 69 by the time you finish high school, 69 vaccines. And after that, it's several a year, you know, until, you know, every few years they have, they want to keep boosting you to quote-unquote childhood vaccines, but they want you to take the flu vaccine every year, the pneumonia vaccine every year, or every other year. But if you do the math, by the time you get to 75, you've had like 156 vaccines. That's if you live that long. So I'm going to, you know what, I'm going to take a break, and now when I come back, we'll talk about happier stuff.
You're an activist. You have a cause and an idea, but you also have lots of questions. You need help. After all, teams have coaches, corporations have consultants, and even politicians have campaign managers. But who do activists turn to? The Solutions Institute. We are a collection of professionals and activists from across the political spectrum. Our goal is to teach, motivate, and put all the necessary tools for activism in your hands without charge. Learn more or submit your project at solutions-institute.org.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose, Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals. A political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
How would you like to make your work more enjoyable, be more creative and relaxed, all while sitting at your desk? That's exactly what my Serenity Rug has done for me. This revolutionary footrest, I can't even call it a footrest, because this thing encourages movement of your feet, which results in more blood flow. While traditional footrests advocate the motionless placement of your feet, I found that I'm unconsciously digging my feet into the long, soft grass strands of the Serenity Rug. It delivers an incredibly relaxing sensation that closely resembles the feeling of an exotic foot massage. If you have ever had a foot massage that made you want to stay there for hours, you know what I'm talking about. If you have not heard about the Serenity Rug, check them out at SerenityRug.com and join the exclusive Serenity Rug community and enjoy a feeling of comfort and relaxation that most will never experience. They've sold out before, so I suggest you do your feet a favor and grab one of these. Again, that's SerenityRug.com.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
Hi, so I'm back, and there was a lot nicer, happier news this week. We reached Jupiter with a probe, and it's been a long time since we had a probe at Jupiter. And the orbit insertion, they call it, was just yesterday. In the morning, they had this press conference with NASA, at NASA, and that's on YouTube. You can watch it. It's an hour and a half or so long. Now, they talk about the science that they're looking for, the science of Jupiter itself that makes it such a dangerous mission for the probe. It's an unmanned probe, obviously. And how they built it to shield the instruments from the radiation and the magnetic field of Jupiter. It has a massive, massive magnetic field. And they want to find out if Jupiter has a core, if it's all liquid. There is a possibility that it's just liquid. They call it metallic hydrogen at the core of it, and that would generate massive, massive magnetic field. Just really interesting to listen to. They have the diagrams up, and you know the moons and the, you know, how the moons are positioned as the thing goes into orbit. And what they did is they launched it from Earth about 5 years ago or so. They took a lap around the Earth's orbit, and then they slung it off of Earth again to get it to go out into the outer solar system. They call that a gravity assist, you know. And, you know, it's taken all this time. It's finally reached Mars. It's a totally solar-powered device. They didn't have any little radioactive whatever in it or, you know, it has batteries, so it has these solar panels that face the sun to generate itself. Well, now when it goes into its, when it's in its orbit around Jupiter, there will be times when it will be shaded by Jupiter itself, and so the battery has to last long enough for it to make that side of the orbit and come forward again. And what's really interesting is it's a polar orbit, and you know, when I think of orbits, I usually think of equatorial orbits because you know, our moon is essentially kind of in an equatorial orbit with us. You know, the celestial plane is kind of, you know, if you look at the signs of the zodiac and, you know, how the planets all move, we're, you know, with some variation, we're all within a band across the sky, kind of equal with our equator. But to orbit in a polar fashion, you kind of have to operate in a corkscrew as the planet moves out from under you and moves along its orbit. You know, you're at 90 degrees from Jupiter's moons, and so it's just the calculations that went into it must have been incredible. And you know, and as you're orbiting in a polar fashion, you know, it's the planet is also rotating beneath your probe, and so you're seeing all latitudes and all sides of Jupiter. And I'm sure that's why they picked it, because had they just got into an equatorial orbit around Jupiter, you wouldn't get a really good look at the poles. But this way, you're looking at the poles, they're rotating under you, and every latitude, every longitude passes under your probe at some time. And so they've got all their instruments, they're measuring, you know, the clouds and the elements and, you know, identifying the right frequencies and everything. But, you know, they're going to be examining the red spot. They want to see how far down it actually goes. Is it a shallow phenomenon, or does it have like a root, like a carrot, you know, like, or maybe some huge planetary scale tornado down to its core, you know, or hurricane. They don't know, and they're going to find out. And it's just fascinating. You know, they have to navigate through the magnetic field. I guess there's this, it's like the bat wings on it or this giant donut, and they scoot under, it's a very oblong orbit pole. So they, as they're near Jupiter, they scoot under this really hot magnetic radiation belt that it's got. You know, we have the Van Allen belts, and Jupiter has its own equivalent, which are much more massive and much more powerful and possibly destructive to the probe. So they scoot under it, and then they come out the other side, and then they take a really wide, long shot around, you know, and they, you know, aiming their instruments back at it from a distance. And then they dive in again and, you know, go under these radiation belts and then out again. And, you know, it's just the calculations that went into it are just fascinating. And so we went into orbit. We arrived and went to orbit on the 4th of July. And so I had a toss-up, and I'm so mad. You know, at the same time we were going into orbit, you know, they were, you know, really just watching them sit at their rows of desks, you know, mission control, and biting their nails as to whether the thing is going to, you know, complete all its programming correctly and come out the other side correctly. And, you know, they had all these backup programs and everything, but it was going to be a tense, you know, 2 hours to see how well it comes out on the backside of Jupiter. You know, and it was right at like 7:30 to 9:30 Pacific time, right when I wanted to be watching the fireworks. So, you know, even though I opted to watch fireworks on TV, and I had a choice of three different shows. It was New York City over the Hudson, or Boston, you know, and they're all wonderful. DC on the Mall, and that's the one I've been watching several years. The PBS, A Capital Fourth, and you know they have the concert and the new stars from Broadway that year, and the classic, you know, rock and roll song that everybody knows and everybody's lively and dancing, and the commemoration of the honoring of the vets that are there, particularly the injured vets, and you know, Colin Powell did his speech, and then you know the orchestra struck up the War of 1812 and some other, you know, great classical pieces, rousing, and we're all watching these fireworks and wow. And one thing I didn't think anything of it, but you know, a lot of the audience, they had on these rain ponchos, and you know, sometimes it was raining, sometimes it wasn't, and you know, you got a view of the sky, and it was kind of patchy, you know, and then it got dark, and you couldn't really tell, and you know, the fireworks went off, and oh, rousing show, yay, you know, you want to watch the rerun, okay, let it run again, you know, all this stuff. Well, we wake up this morning to the headlines on Drudge. Oh, PBS didn't like the weather last night, and so they spliced in best of from previous years in the fireworks. I guess they used the audio from this year, but the fireworks themselves weren't all this year. They spliced it in from other years, and people that were real astute, I mean, I just wasn't paying that close of attention. People that were real astute noticed the sky changing. It went, you know, from cloudy, rainy, you know, overcast to, oh, lovely, clear. Which, you know, I lived in the D.C. area for a while. You know, the weather can change, you know, pretty much anywhere. The weather can just clear up and you don't think anything of it. So I didn't think anything of it. But other people were paying attention and they noticed that, you know, the Capitol's been under scaffolding forever. They're redoing the dome, whatever they're doing to it. And that the scaffolding was appearing and disappearing. And that, oh, man, I feel so innocent. I don't care if the fireworks are partly obscured by clouds. I just don't care. I want it, you know, if not live, at least today's, you know, because I know the sun isn't set here when they're showing it back there. So, but it just, you know, I was just horrified that they would, why do they think that we're that critical? It has to be perfect like that, that they have to take fireworks footage from previous years. I mean, this is the kind of thing that China did when they had the Olympics, the Summer Olympics. Just, you know, they spliced in extra fireworks, they spliced in extra dancers, who knows what the heck they did. But that was the big thing at the time. Oh, the Chinese government, ha, 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 they're all propaganda, and they, you know, they think human beings can't live with, you know, imperfect conditions or imperfect situations. You know, everything has to be perfect on the news because that's the China way. Well, now with our big brother in office, he obviously thinks the same way, that everything has to be controlled like that. And, you know, I was just so disappointed. So I watched the fireworks instead of watching the Jupiter thing, because really I didn't have to watch a lot of engineers at their desks at Mission Control biting their nails about Jupiter coming out. I could have tuned in at the last minute and done the big cheer, which, you know, it's like, oh, I'll tune in the morning, because what I'm really excited about is the science that's going to come back from it. And we have a few years of that to go on. I think it's, what is it, like 56 orbits, and each orbit is 34 days, or is it 34 orbits, and each orbit is 56 days, something like that. But maybe they're Jupiter days, so maybe they're longer or shorter. And I should really study up on the rotation rate of Jupiter. And maybe it's not the same at all latitudes anyway. The sun isn't the same at all latitudes. It's close, but there's a curve. You know, it's a little bit faster at the equator than it is at the poles, you know, because it's not a solid body, and Jupiter's not a solid body unless, you know, the core might be at the bottom. We don't really know yet. But, you know, so basically it's a gaseous giant and can't really expect all the latitudes to be rotating at the same pace. And you can see it in the swirls of the bands, you know, that if the lower, like a hurricane here, you know, it's spun by the lower latitude edge of the storm operating a bit faster than the higher latitude of the storm, or the other way. east the other way. I don't know, but that's what causes the rotations and the storms and the swirls and the clouds and, you know, and the spin in your toilet. I do hear that it's in the southern hemisphere, toilets spin the other way, and it has to do with the Coriolis effect and, you know, all that, which is just latitudes rotating at slightly different speeds, at least for a liquid, you know, like water or a gaseous cloud. So anyway, I've got some links on the site Mad Scientist Post to NASA TV, the NASA website about the Juno mission. It's called the Juno mission to Jupiter, and you know, so there's all kinds of science you can dig into. And in fact, recently NASA put out some posters. They're recruiting because they want to get into Mars exploration. Now we've had those probes at Mars for several years. And people I knew in college were actually on the team that helped design some of those instruments. So it's great to be able to send them a question once in a while. I don't want to impose too much on their goodwill and hospitality, but it's nice to know some people on the inside and say, hey, you know, what's happening here? What do you think of this news story? You know, and they'll say it's bogus, or yeah, well, we're not ready to discuss that yet. You know, there were rumors about the water on Mars for quite a while before they actually announced the water on Mars, and so they didn't want to tell me too much. Wait for the official data reduction. Don't take the rumors, and you know. And now there's pictures of things, you know, melting in the Mars summer. You know, there's frozen water in the hills and the poles or whatever, and you know, watch it long enough, and you can see the things melting, and so that's pretty obvious in the photographs, and so you know. The science was released on that. So now that we know that there's water on Mars, NASA has out recruitment posters, and I've got a link to those. They're looking for all kinds of engineers and scientists and colonists, essentially, for Mars, because they're looking for technicians to build things. They're looking for farmers to farm on Mars, and I have my theories about that. You know, one thing with the two... the Kelly brothers, Gabby Gifford's husband and his twin brother, they're both astronauts, but one is retired and one just came back from the space station a couple of months ago. And he came back a couple inches taller, because when you're not in a gravitational environment, your spine kind of stretches like a slinky. And I guess in time, maybe he's back to his normal height now, I don't know. But, you know, there will be things on Mars that will be very hard to experiment with before we actually go there, because I'm sure if the effect on the human body in a low gravitational field, then plants will have a similar reaction, I would think, you know, for farmers. So, and, you know, Mars is not as big as the Earth, so the gravity is going to be less. I mean, it's a good planet size. It has more gravity than the Moon. The Moon, if you remember all the Moon landing shots, you know, you can see them kind of bouncing along. Like 1/6 the gravity on the Moon than it is here, and Mars is a little bit closer to, you know, having a full size gravitational field. You know, I think people are going to be taller on Mars. I think the planets are going to be taller, although it is, and of course it's farther from the Sun. And you know, I've experimented a bit with growing sprouts, and the thing with, you know, and plants. I've got a little garden that right now is suffering in the Phoenix heat, but a few things are still living. But when you're growing, you know, the indoor sprouts and the hydroponic stuff, you control the light. Because if you want nice, tall, you know, sprouts, then you grow them in the dark. You kind of put a cover over them and let them grow. And they're reaching, looking for light, reaching. When they're tall enough that you want to eat them, you just lay them in the window for a couple hours, and they green up really fast. And then they're a lovely shade of green, and you can have your sprouts. And, you know, I like my sunflower sprouts. I've tried other kinds of sprouts, too. And, you know, so just these little things about plants. I'm not by any means any expert farmer. I know people who are, who own a few acres and they farm them all by hand. And, you know, I have a friend who's, he and his wife own a couple acres in the middle of town in Tucson, and they're local farmers. They go to the farmer's market and they have quite a variety of vegetables and know a lot of farming techniques. For the, you know, the big new movement of local farming, you know, and I do encourage everybody to support their local farmers, because being totally dependent on big corporate farming is really, really dangerous with the GMO stuff out there. And some of those people, you know, big corporate bigwigs are the same people that are the big corporate bigwigs in the pharmaceutical industry. And, you know, they're comparing notes and they're talking about making vaccine bananas. I don't know what kind of vaccine they're going to put in, you know, and various other kinds of fruit, because if they can't make you take them, they're going to trick you into taking them, or they're going to deliver them to, a third world country, the people who might not be reading the news in English, you know, just all kinds of stuff. They'll do things by stealth if they can. I'm sorry to say, because that's what's going on, you know, that we have the CDC whistleblower, and I'm back on the vaccine, but if there is life already on Mars, I don't know how we get off introducing more life to Mars, if it's going to compete and ruin what's there already, or if they're really, really sure there's no life on Mars. That's a good question. I should send my my friends in the program over there. all these posters now to get people on Mars, to get plants on Mars. I don't know if everybody's going to be a vegetarian when they get there, if they're going to start bringing cattle. Well, cattle can't breathe, and I don't think you can put a spacesuit on a cow or on animals there. Because I guess you'd keep them in domes of some sort, because there is not enough air pressure there for people to breathe. And I don't even know if it's the right combination of elements, oxygen or whatever, to breathe. But of course, you'd have to pressurize it. And I guess people here, some of you folks might have seen the movie. What was it, a year or two ago with, I think the title of it was just Mars, where, Leonardo DiCaprio was the essentially the Robinson Crusoe on Mars. And not to be confused with the other movie, Robinson Crusoe on Mars, that was made in the 50s. That was a fun movie, too. He dealt with the oxygen deprivation. He took these oxygen pills, and he had this little monkey sidekick, and it was all cute, you know, because the Russians were putting monkeys up in space at the time, and you know, that it is a really cute movie, Robinson Crusoe on Mars. This more recent one was, I think it was Leonardo DiCaprio. It was more modern science in it, and he rigged up a dome with some tarps, whatever, and he planted potatoes that he had there, and he managed to live long enough for them to come back and get him. I did not buy the ending at all. It was supposed to be such a scientifically well-designed movie, but I did not buy the ending. And you know, the movie ended happy, that's fine, but I didn't buy it. And then I watched a movie on Amazon Prime. And what was the name of that? It was another type of astronaut movie where they were hopping between galaxies and time travel and all this kind of stuff. And he was the bad astronaut. They had an astronaut go rogue and turn bad. It was just kind of funny. And, you know, this is all in the space of a week. I saw him as the hero astronaut who overcame all the elements on Mars and managed to live long enough to be rescued. And this other guy who through a lot of devious tricks, caused the demise of several other astronauts. It was just kind of funny. I guess I shouldn't watch too many of these. Or maybe I should. You know, there's a lot of decades there that we just stopped dreaming about space travel. You know, after the moonwalks into the early 70s, we just stopped going to the moon. And, you know, I've come across people on Facebook who don't believe that we went. And because they're so much younger than me, you know, and I'm like, no, we went, but we stopped going. And they just don't, why would we stop going? They don't believe it. And I'm like, I'll tell you why. It was the Jimmy Carter era, you know, and his age of malaise that he tried to impose on us all. And the story was, why should we be going to the moon when we still have poor people? You know, we should spend it all on going to the moon. That's outrageously extravagant and useless and blah, blah, blah. And you know, the girl didn't believe me. You know, the woman, she's a grown woman, didn't believe me. That's a ridiculous reason to stop going to the moon. I said, I know, but that is the reason we stopped going. And so there's people out there now thinking, we never went. We wouldn't have stopped going if we ever really went. And, you know, these people have gotten into the social fabric like worms, and even, I think, maybe into the academic. And some of my own kids have asked me, did we really go to the moon? I'm like, yes, we really went to the moon. And there's people even, no, that footage is fake. That footage is fake. They're like, no, it's not, you know, because I've heard astronauts speak who came back, and they were forever changed. You know, if you just if you're just acting in some kind of a skit, you're not changed the way these people were changed. And, you know, a couple of years ago, some real jerk of a guy jumped into Buzz Aldrin's face with a microphone. You need to admit that it was all a fraud. And he just kept shoving that mic in his face till Buzz Aldrin punched him in the nose and everybody cheered. Neil Armstrong became essentially a hermit when he came back because looking back at the Earth from so far away, it changed him profoundly. It changed him profoundly. And other astronauts have come back and said, you know, they saw stuff on the moon that they didn't expect to see, you know, and other astronauts dispute that. So who knows if it's hallucinating or if he really saw what could have been artificially constructed structures. Were we there millions of years ago ourselves, or are there aliens building bases? Are these left over? Are they still in use? Or are they on the far side of the moon? And, you know, for entertainment and just to think, I like to watch this YouTube channel called Secure Team 10. He talks about, you know, UFOs that are spying on the space station, you know, or they're coming out from behind the backside of the moon, or there's, you know, he sees like clouds, you know how you can look at the clouds and see castles in the clouds. Well, he will look at rock formations and see shapes. There's one that came out the other day, and I don't think it was his channel, somebody else's. It was a rock formation on Mars that they you know, they zoom in, they crop in it, they remove all sense of scale, and then they say, hey, this looks like a dinosaur skull, and they put a dinosaur skull next to it. And sure enough, it does look like a dinosaur skull, but I have no idea of scale. They're showing me. It's just that's just for entertainment, but this kind of stuff goes on. Well, Secure Team 10 did recently did a video called What's Going On? Why the Sudden Rush to Mars? And that's true because, you know, all the governments of the world had no interest in going anywhere for years and years and years and years and years, you know, since, you know, the early to mid-70s. You know, we had no indication of going back to any kind of planetary body except for with a robot probe. Well, no, now we actually want to send people. And we have, he gives a big list of governments. There's the U.S., you know, America, China, Japan, France, India, all these countries that are talking about going to Mars. And why? What's the rush? Maybe it's just another space race, like we had the race to the moon with the Russians. Now, why did the Russians not go after we stopped going to the moon? I guess because the race was over, they had lost, and they didn't want to be the second come lately. I don't know why Russia never went to Mars other than, you know, maybe they just didn't have the money to do it, you know, because that's essentially what collapsed the Soviet Union was, their economy kind of collapsed and they couldn't sustain it anymore, policing the people and going to other planets. I don't know, going to the moon. I don't know. So it's an interesting question as to why the sudden rush to Mars. And maybe it's just to be the first to be there. Maybe they've discovered valuable elements. Maybe they're mining them and hauling back here. I don't know. I really don't know. So there is, links to NASA TV and the Mars thing. And I think it's time for another break here. So I'll be back in a few minutes.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at williamlewisfilms.com. Get your DVDs today at williamlewisfilms.com. Educate against the police state.
There are a lot of problems with Common Core. I don't even have time to go into most of them. But a step in the right direction would be to give local communities, teachers, parents, control over their schools so they can design curriculums and standards to best meet the needs of their students and get the federal government out of education.
U.S. trade negotiators are pushing to complete the TPP this year. They're trying to keep it under the radar. The best way to stop the TPP is to drag it into the light of day. Right now, negotiators have appointed approximately 600 corporate lobbyists to serve as cleared advisors on the TPP, while refusing to release any of their negotiating proposals for public review. The corporate media is unlikely to inform the public about the TPP. We need to do it ourselves.
Hi, I'm back, and I feel like I've been hogging the microphone this whole time. And if you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number is 347-324-3704. And you can just listen to the show at that number, or you can dial 1, and I'll get a little notice here, and I'll take the call. Again, that number is 347-324-3704. And we have a caller already. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Ed calling. How are you doing, Suzanne?
Hi.
You know, I was just thinking about the moons of Jupiter, and you know, the Galilean moons are the ones that were actually discovered by Galileo almost 500 years ago. You know, Europa, Ganymede, which is bigger than Mercury, actually, Io and Callisto. But now, here's something incredible. There are 63 other moons of Jupiter. There's a total of 67 moons now that they've discovered, including Jupiter.
Yeah.
And here's what I think is amazing, that the Juno probe, that the guys in Pasadena, NASA, wherever, you know, whoever put this together, they must have had to plot the orbits of every single one of these moons to make sure that when it entered this polar orbit, that not only on the first, orbit, but subsequent orbits, which was, what are they going to have, 35 orbits or something like that, that none of those are going to conflict with one of the satellites. Because, you know, I mean, even if it comes within a certain distance of one of these bigger moons, it could throw it off or something. But, I mean, it could actually even crash, you know. I mean, I know there's a lot of space around Jupiter. Jupiter's a huge planet, and, of course, you know, the orbits of these moons are enormous. But 67 moons, Suzanne, don't you think that they had an awful effort to figure out how to get through the 67 moons? Because they have to go right through the plane of it, of all of them, I would think.
Yeah, it is amazing. And at the press conference yesterday, somebody asked, well, are you expecting to find more moons? I'm like, wouldn't we have? I'm thinking, wouldn't we have seen them from here with our telescopes? We've got space telescopes now, which are high resolution, but you know, we lose sense of the scale that's out there. They're moons, but it's almost like throwing sand grains at each other. But you know, we could get unwittingly hit with one of those extra moons that we haven't been discovered yet. They talked quite a bit in the press conference about passing through the ring of Jupiter. Now, people think of Saturn as the one with the rings, and Saturn does have the giant rings.
Mm-hmm.
But Jupiter was discovered to have a small set of rings, smaller than Saturn's anyway. I don't know, what is it, 10 or 20 years ago? I mean, I grew up not knowing about any ring on Saturn, but Saturn does have rings, and they do have to pass through it every time they make the orbit. And one of the reporters at the press conference asked, well, aren't you afraid of of having damage from passing through the rings? And they said, yep, it might. It might. The odds are against it, but it might, you know.
So the rings, every
mission has risks, you know.
Well, the rings must be composed of trillions of particles, right? And at the speed that the spacecraft is going, just one of those particles could pierce the shielding. I mean, I suppose, I don't know what damage it could
do. Well, they tried to build it to be pretty robust, but, you know, they did what they could do, and, you know, you can't not go because you can't anticipate every single variable. You know, if you run into variables that damage the mission, you account for it in future missions.
Mm-hmm.
But hopefully we'll get a lot of science into this.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting.
By the way, it is exciting. By the way, if you go to Wikipedia's Moons of Jupiter, that's why I looked up Moons of Jupiter, and they actually have, a thing that you can go from right to left that has photographs of all the moons that they've got. They have photographs of about the first 30, and then after that they just have data without a photograph. Uh-huh. Except I see that somebody, you know how people can go into Wikipedia and they can edit it? Or they can edit Wikipedia articles? So somebody edited one of these, but it's called Herse, H-E-R-S-E, or Herse.
Oh, I see that.
You see that? It appears to be an anime from, like, a Japanese anime of a lady's legs or something. And that's so weird, you know? That's so weird.
That'll be
but then
fun.
Again,
you know, so many people are looking up Jupiter now that somebody will find this and fix it. I hope they do.
Yeah,
you know,
to do that.
You know what's amazing is some of these moons I've never heard of, and they're large enough to be round. And a lot of them are not round. They're so small. But if something is large enough to be round, that has a significant amount of gravity that holds it in a round shape. And there's one called Kale. I don't know. I think maybe people have been playing with these of them, too, because this looks like Europa to me. And somebody named
it
Kale.
That's very round. And there's also another one called Lysithia. Lysithia looks round and cratered. It looks as cratered as the moon. But then they have larger moons like Amalthea. Or Amalthea, I guess it's Amalthea, and Anke, and those just look like pebbles that somebody found by the ocean. You know, they're definitely not round. They're definitely not round. That's fascinating. Yeah, so many moons, huh? Why are they all different colors and shapes? Why are some of them, you know, gray, and some of them are golden, and some of them are kind of like in between colors, you know how you could go to the beach and you can find pebbles of all different shapes and sizes and colors. These just look like pebbles from the beach. So how come they're orbiting Jupiter and they're so different from each other? Strange, isn't it?
Maybe there was another round one that kind of disintegrated for whatever reason. I don't know how rocks get their shape. It's creeping on its face. Now this one, Stevie, that looks like it was taken with black and white film. That's how great that looks. You'd expect some more color in it than that.
Which one?
Phoebe, T-H-E-B-E. And these pictures all might change by tonight. Who knows who's managing this page? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. So it might be a different color if they had used the colored film. Interesting.
Yeah, I was right.
You know,
this thing that somebody has labeled Kale, it is the exact same picture as Europa. It is.
Really, they're using
the same picture. No. People are messing with the site, with the Wikipedia. Oh, we won't use Wikipedia. Maybe we should just rely on the NASA website to get the true.
I just
looked
at it, and the markings are identical on Kale as they are on Europa. How strange is that? Yeah.
Somebody's messing with it. So I didn't know that Ganymede was bigger than Mercury.
Do you know what? I think somebody added something. It's called Eupori or something. That's a page with a graphic. It's totally different even. Well, I don't think anybody's going to settle on Jupiter or Jupiter's moons anytime soon. Do you? No atmosphere?
Yeah.
No water?
I mean, some of the moons have atmospheres. I think it's Io. Well, that has a volcanic thing going on. And which one was it that had... We were watching something on YouTube the other day, and one of the moons, oh, man, it had an ocean.
Wasn't
on
one
it.
Of them? Well, that's right.
Or
one
was,
of
it,
them,
was it a moon of Saturn or a moon of, was it a moon of Saturn,
you know,
or a moon
thinking,
of Jupiter? I don't remember.
Wasn't it Triton on Saturn or something,
okay.
One of Saturn's moons?
Yeah.
But they expect that there's a lot of water. Yeah, you know, if there's
well,
a couple miles
of ice. Well, it might not be water. It might be liquid
there.
Something else. It might not be water. It might be something.
Well, how do they know for
well,
sure, you know? I wonder.
Well, you can shine, the light that reflects off it or the light that it shines,
mm-hmm.
you can tell the elements that are in it. By the spectrum, every element has its own signature in a spectrum, and if the object that you're looking at is absorbing light, then that spectrum lines are going to be dark, it's absorbing in it,
mm-hmm.
but and it's reflecting back the rest of the spectrum to you. If that body that you're looking at is shining like a star, then those elements that mm-hmm. are in that star are going to be lines, extra bright lines across that spectrum,
mm-hmm.
and every element has a signature, and so you can kind of measure what that body is made of by all the different element signatures,
okay.
and of course there's a lot of things overlapping, so it's a lot of work to identify what elements are there
mm-hmm.
that you're looking at, and of course
mm-hmm.
if something's really far out there, then there's redshift going on, So you have to move the whole signature up or down the spectrum, redshift or blue shift if it's coming toward you, redshift if it's moving away.
That really
that's what the theory is. Most things are redshifted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes it's a little tricky to figure out exactly which elements you're
mm-hmm.
looking at because it's been shifted up and down the spectrum and there's other elements that are also overlapping and because most things are made out of more than one thing, although hydrogen is
mm-hmm.
by far the most important element.
This is mad scientists, right? This is mad scientists. So I could be considered a mad scientist because I believe in astrology, you know? I believe astrology. And do you know one of the things they say about Jupiter is it's the benevolent god. It's the planet.
Yeah, you assign personalities.
Positive.
That might be a dimension that NASA doesn't know how to measure.
The word
it's a personality.
The word Jovian. The word Jovian, you know, for someone who's joyous or whatever, that comes from the root word for Jove or Jupiter in Latin, I guess. And really, it's supposed to be protective. If a person in their birth chart has Jupiter and very positively placed, that'll be a happy person with good things happening. They'll be benevolent, maybe a healer or some kind of like a really nice, good person or whatever. And, you know, Jupiter, there was one thing that happened historically that makes me think maybe that's true, and that was, do you remember the Shoemaker-Levy comet? This whole series.
Right,
and, you know, Jupiter somehow, because of its tremendous gravity, it very luckily it attracted it to its orbit, and then the comet crashed on, wasn't it about 1992 or 1994 or something like that? And it made, I think there were 26... Wasn't there something like 26 impacts over a period of several days? And some of those impacting portions were as big as planet Earth. Some of those were as big as planet Earth, you know? And
some of those comet fragments?
Yeah, some of the pieces of the comet. There were 26 of them, and they were in a line, and they all, you know, hit in different places and threw up a lot of debris, you know, in the atmosphere. For months, there was you could see the pattern, you know, where it did that. Anyway,
YouTube has
here's
video
my,
of it.
Here's the theory.
Here's
the astrological theory of it. The astrological theory is, it is Jupiter that could save Earth from these kind of comets, rogue comets and asteroids, because it sucks them up with its gravity, so they never get into the inner solar system. You know, I mean, You know, they were on their way to the sun. I guess they were on the way to the sun, and Jupiter scooped them up. And it could have saved some other planet from an impact, you know. We don't want anything that big landing on Earth, you know.
You're right. I've heard that before, that the outer big gaseous planets will suck up a lot of the debris that just kind of wanders around the asteroids and stuff and, you know, that keep it from hitting us. You know, we do, obviously, we have a couple of craters, it's harder to identify because we have weather erosion and water erosion. You know, there's a lot of craters on the moon, so that's been hit by stuff. And I think it's the Gulf of Mexico is a crater, and then there's another one somewhere.
Yeah. You know, the one around Yucatan there was supposed to be the one that killed the dinosaurs. That was from around 65 million years ago.
As per some theories, but there's competing theories, but that wouldn't surprise me. You know, that's what did it. There's some video on the History Channel for the Shoemaker-Levy comet. So maybe I should. I'll put that in the page.
Oh yeah.
So people can see it.
Let me just put one more word in for something, and that is.
Oh yeah.
You were talking about Mars. I like Mars. And I was just wondering, why do they think that these things they call the Martian blueberries, you know, those little purple, little round things that are in abundance, why do they just assume that those things are some kind of crystals or some kind of rocks or something? I mean,
I don't know. I'd have to Google it.
Why didn't they ever go and pick one of those up and look at it and, you know, examine it and crush it and look at it, you know? I just wonder if those things aren't organic or what's left. You know how like seashells are left of animals that once lived? Those things could be like shells or some kind of skeletons of some kind of creatures that were once there. They look very suspicious to me. You know the blueberries I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, and I'd have to pull up more pictures. I haven't looked at them in a long time. I put the link to the video of the comet Shoemaker-Levy impacting Jupiter. I put that link out on that scientist that exposed. Let me see what I can find about blueberries for you.
Oh, you're fast. Yeah, you're good. I can't move around that fast on that.
Martian spherules, also known as blueberries, due to their blue hue in false color images released by NASA, are the abundant spherical. Yeah, and you can. I used to do that with pictures of the sun. You know, false color depending on what. In my case, velocity the different particles are moving. There's different reasons that you want to bring out, transfer scientific data into a false color image so you can see it with your human mind.
What's the real color, Suzanne? Well, they're bringing them out in blue, but you're saying that the real color could be something different?
Yeah, now it's showing me a black and white picture, so I can't tell what it is. And that's also Wikipedia. Anyway, it says these are abundant spherical hematite inclusions discovered by the Mars rover Opportunity at Mirandiani Planum on the planet Mars. And this is, the Wikipedia is very wimpy here. We'd have to go sniff around NASA website, JPL, maybe look at places.
Are you saying they're only at one location? That they're implying that they found them at one location, meaning one location only?
Well, you know, we haven't seen all of Mars. We had two little, you know, rovers. You know, we haven't seen all of Mars, so I don't know where they are. So now here's the dailymail.co.uk. They're going to link back, and they're going to use the height and color. Wikipedia just shows black and white. Oh, wow. This very pretty. It does look like blueberries laying all over some red rocks here. They're calling it hematite. They're calling it hematite. So I don't know. I don't know.
Hematite?
Yeah.
I don't know. If they didn't really do an analysis of them, they're just eyeballing them and calling them hematite. I don't know. I think they should get a rover over there. But do you think that they ever actually got a? But do you think they ever got the rover over? Do you think they ever got the rover right there and then reached out with one of those arms and penetrated it or pushed it around, played soccer with it, whatever they do to try to analyze what's in that thing? Or are they just eyeballing
sure
it from
it's on the plan.
100 million miles away? I don't know. They look edible to me. They look like somebody could have
eaten
them.
They look edible. Well, and it's very possible they've been colorized. You know, I wonder what hematite looks like on the Earth. I'll just Google up a hematite picture.
Oh, okay. Sure.
And I'll see what it looks like on the Earth. Images.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's black. Oh, now they're showing some red and black Earth. They look like the magnets that I bought the kids at a craft fair one time or in the planetarium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're super, super smooth and shiny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and they're going to be spherical. Here's something out of Australia. So it's pretty. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at hematite jewelry, hematite ring, hematite meaning. Oh, my goodness.
Just click on, put hematite in the search bar and click on images when you get there. Unless
okay,
you're not
now
using
click on
Google.
Images. Okay.
Yeah, so it's
kind
of black and shiny.
But you know what? That doesn't look like it. The Martian blueberry hematite looks more porous. It looks kind of like a cocoa puff or something like that. It looks like it could have
Mars
been made by
dusty.
General Mills.
Mars is very dusty.
Yeah, so they get covered with dust.
It could be dust that makes them look porous. I don't know.
I'm looking at all these images, and they all look shiny. They all look kind of, they don't have that porous quality at all. So I'm really amazed that they decided to call it hematite. Oh, there's Darth Vader in there, too. Darth Vader carved out of hematite.
The black shiny helmet.
Well, there's like
about
100
photos. Yeah, we
got to
find the Tatooine planet to put him on.
None of the pictures of hematite from planet Earth look edible, but the hematite from Mars looks like easily some creature could, you know, bring it home for breakfast, you know.
Well, that's just a false color in the dust. I don't know. I don't think I'd eat anything on the surface of Mars. I read somewhere what, you know, that yes, it has the water, but there are a lot of other molecules bound into the water that would make it positively toxic.
Hmm.
You know, if our people go there, when our people go there, they're going to have to filter that out somehow. So, and maybe that's what's going on all the planet. Just to tie it into the trouble the Earth is in. All the globalists are going to destroy the Earth and they're looking for another place to live themselves.
Well, I have a question, you know.
That's why the rush to Mars question.
You know, Discovery, the different rovers and whatnot that have been there so far, don't they have a way of examining things microscopically? Could they look at something, for example, and look for living organisms that are very, very small, or do you think they haven't done that yet? Because I'm
not even doing
sure
it.
That if there's, don't you think if there's ever been life on Mars, I mean, if there'd be some kind of microbial life still down there, you know, if they could penetrate a couple inches into the sand or whatever, you know, or into that moisture. And then that would be just amazing. And then we'd find out if it's anything like life on Earth, anything even remotely like life on Earth, you know.
We need to find the journals and read them.
Oh.
And I don't think they found it if they would have found life there.
They would have told us. Right? If they found any kind of life.
There's all these people out there, conspiracy theories out there. Martin, you know, NASA won't tell us anything. Well, you know, NASA is very careful about what they tell people because people can blow things out of proportion. And, you know, one thing that I don't believe is, you know, a few years ago they told us, oh, we found some Martian rocks at the South Pole in Antarctica. I'm like, yeah, right. How did it get there? Oh, well, a meteor hit Mars and that blasted it off and it escaped the Martian orbit and landed on our pole. I'm like, that's too far-fetched. Throwing grains of sand at each other, I don't believe it. You know, because they were making a big deal out of it. Oh, there were fossils in it. Like, no.
You know,
I don't believe it at all.
If I wrote a story like that and sent it to a science fiction magazine, it would be rejected
as being
totally stupid.
Sure.
It's ridiculous. I mean, a meteor
glancing
at the Mars
and
sending it to the Antarctic.
That's
crazy.
Fiction is fiction. Yeah, like it should have fallen anywhere, you know, but the Antarctica is where we'd find it because it gets frozen in the pristine white snow. And it's got fossils that you crack it open. I'm like, no, I don't believe it. Those are Earth fossils. I'm sure of it. You know, I don't know.
But, you know, sometimes it's fun to look at, to add the word anomaly, you know, like undersea anomaly or outer space anomaly or moon anomaly or, you know, Martian anomaly. And you'll get dozens or hundreds of, you know, stories about it. Something unexpected, something weird. But a lot of it may be fake or in the eye of the beholder, you know?
Yeah. I you know, looking at pictures of Mars, you know, when I was a kid, you know, the telescopes were just, you know, the big ones, we only had a few, and, you know, we had some pictures that were kind of fuzzy of the planets, and now we have some really good close-up pictures. We've been sending probes to these things, and they look so desolate, and it's, and I think Buzz Aldrin wrote his book about that, about the moon looking so desolate, and what do you call it, devastating beauty or something like that, that he called his book. And, you know, and I look at Mars, and it's like, they want to send these people there, and you know, I'd love to be part of the science kind of stuff, but I don't want to go to Mars. I think, you know, the Earth is so, and blue and green and, you know, life everywhere on the surface that, you know, I think really, you know, metaphorically it is, you know, the Garden of Eden, and we're just the people, you know, people that have messed it up. There's nothing wrong with the Earth. We've just, you know, with pollution, but mostly with the evil of people against people. That's really where the suffering comes from. We can,
there's,
you know, turning
wrong with
loose
planet
diseases
Earth.
And but we just don't know how to live here. we turn on each other and make each other's lives miserable, and that's essentially the story of the Bible. You know, so science and the Bible actually agree, and it's hard to get people of science to see that. But, you know, of course, the church has come a long way since it persecuted Galileo. They made him sit in jail for a while because he was talking about the planets going around the sun. And, oh, no, that's not how it goes. Well, the Bible doesn't really say that. Yeah, the Bible doesn't really say, oh, the sun goes around the earth. It's just they couldn't open their minds enough. You know, and they've since apologized for that, which God bless them for figuring that out. But, you know, I think there's a lot of paradigms that we're going to cross here. And I think into other dimensions, like you do, you know, some people can see it and some people can't, assigning personalities to the planets and things like that. So that's how astrology
like
works. You mentioned it. Yeah, so I think you're observing some dimension that science can't measure, is how I think that you're doing it.
Well, the people that were there before the scientists that did scientific types of things, like these priests that used to stand on these ziggurats at night in, you know, Mesopotamia or Babylon or whatever, and they would look up at the heavens.
Yeah.
They did that for a couple hundred years, and they took notes about it. When cuneiform, you can have notes.
I think it was thousands of years. You know?
And they just assumed, they started out with kind of an assumption that, you know, hey, look at this. When Venus and Mars were together, there was a birth of a sun or something like that. Or when Mars was up at the heaven with in the midheaven with Saturn, war came with Nineveh or something like that, you know, and they made records of this for hundreds of years, and so therefore they came up with the idea that there was some kind of relationship between in the heavens and what happens on Earth. As it is above, so it is below. But you know,
it's some kind of thing in our own minds that are making the connection.
They were observers. They were observers, and that's what scientists are supposed to do too, isn't it? Observe and experiment.
Sometimes it's hard to make an observation without actually affecting the outcome, and that could be what's going on here. There's particle observation, like they're doing at CERN with their high speed collider and all that stuff. It's hard to observe the results without actually affecting the outcome, and that might be something like what's going on here. I worked for a few years in solar astronomy and stuff, and where everything was just the pure cold facts, just the math. You know, it's hard. It's taken me a long time to kind of relate to what you do, you know, with finding meaning to the motions in the planets. And I thought, for a long time, I thought astrology was supposed to be about gravity affecting people's brains on the Earth, but it's not the gravity. It's something else entirely that I don't understand.
In the case of CERN, I think that they're so into the science that they're not even thinking about what it might do to Earth and to the people, because they're so into their experiments, you know.
The BP
and
Earth
that's what makes them mad scientists.
Yeah, they are affecting the magnetic field every time they fire that collider up, and it's very scary what they're doing. But I see here we're running to the end of the episode here, and I'm going to have to say good night to everybody. And thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next week. Tune in next week at same time, same location.
Good night.
Good night.